The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker tov, chodesh tov, mishe nichnas adar marvin besimcha. It's that time of the year we're supposed to be getting ready for Purim. You know, the feeling is in the air. I liked your description of plank. I think you should write it on Wikipedia, Howard. I think it's really great.
You know, if there's one thing you learn spending hours and hours on radio is to be descriptive in a very short way, because you've got to be able to describe something visual. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Before we get on to the heavy stuff, let's just talk about the marathons.
Yes, because a lot of our listeners are messaging and saying, what is happening with the Tel Aviv marathon, the Jerusalem marathon, in terms of coronavirus?
Okay, so the Tel Aviv marathon is scheduled to take place on this coming Friday, the 28th. The Jerusalem Marathon, less than a month away now, I think on the 24th of March, is the Jerusalem Marathon. According to the website, 24 days, 9 hours, 50 minutes and 41 seconds until the start of the Jerusalem Marathon. But what is the current situation? So there's been a lot of pressure on the marathon organizers concerning the coronavirus. Would you believe that the Tel Aviv Marathon attracts 3,000 runners from outside of Israel?
Amazing.
Which was quite an astonishing statistic to me. And it's a good thing until there's corona. And then apparently it's not such a good thing, because potentially people can come in and bring the coronavirus with them. And apparently out of those 3,000 who come from abroad, something like 1,000 are people who come from Asian countries who are currently actually banned from entering Israel at all. So the health ministry has put a lot of pressure on the organizers of the marathons to say no foreign runners are going to be allowed to come to Israel to run in these marathons. And that is my understanding of the current situation, that runners from abroad, people who have registered with official contacts from outside of Israel, have been informed that they will not be allowed to run. They will get a full refund of their registration money, according to the organizers, although I'm sure that your plane tickets and things like that will be a little bit harder to get refunded if you if you have still got those bookings. And there was even pressure to cancel the marathon, both the Tel Aviv marathon and the Jerusalem marathons, completely. But I understand that that's not the case now. So there will be approximately 40,000 Israeli runners running on Friday morning in the various different distances that they have available in the Tel Aviv marathon. And hopefully, with a little bit of luck and things will calm down, by the time we get to the 24th of March, the opportunity will be reopened for foreign runners to come along and, of course, to participate in the Jerusalem Marathon, which attracts even more foreign runners than the Tel Aviv Marathon does. So at the moment, both marathons, as I understand, are still alive and running, but the Tel Aviv Marathon this week is closed to those people who've registered from abroad.
The strange thing is, I was chatting to somebody earlier today, and he's running as a foreigner. All he's done is got an Israeli registration from somebody. So I mean, I just can't imagine.
They're always around it, apparently.
Of course, they're multiple, and no one's going to stop somebody from running it anyway. So even if you don't get the official recognition, you can still go and run it, because how's anybody going to know? So the whole thing is very, very odd in terms of how they've made this decision. And people that might have arrived from abroad, especially for the Tel Aviv Marathon, because there was no time to cancel, very, very little time.
Yeah, they'll run.
Or they'll just be there. So it makes no difference if they're there and running and they are not running. It's as, if they're carrying coronavirus, it's as catchy. So it's a very, very strange way of trying to deal with this, I think.
Well, I think there's a political issue going on, which if you're preventing the 1,000 runners from Asian countries coming along,
are you going to be seen to be discriminatory?
You know, we spoke yesterday about this whole discrimination aspect of the coronavirus. And so I just wonder whether this is kind of just not a broad brush approach to try to avoid accusations of discrimination against those. I mean, 1,000 runners is quite a lot of people, and traditionally also quite a number of runners coming from the Central African countries. Traditionally, they've been ones who've won these marathons in past years. African runners are quite well represented. So I've no idea what all of that means. I suspect that we will put on our TV on Friday morning and watch the shots at the finishing line, and there will be African runners coming in to take the prizes. That's what I suspect, even though this announcement has been officially made. I think that it's all about trying to placate any accusations of discrimination against those runners who are formally being banned from entering Israel because they come from countries that, you know, are obviously the people from those countries are currently not allowed to come to Israel because of the virus.
All right. So certainly that is a story that is very, very relevant to many people, and in fact to many South Africans who have already booked for the Jerusalem Marathon. So we will definitely keep a close eye on that one. A unilateral ceasefire declared last night by Islamic Jihad is still holding this morning after more than 50 missiles were fired from Gaza to Israel yesterday. Okay, where are we with this? What were the main events that took place yesterday, and how did we get to a ceasefire declaration so quickly?
Well, 50 missiles is a lot. I mean, you know, even on a day when we knew and we were prepared for the fact that it was going to be busy in terms of attacks against Israel, many of the roads, the main arterial roads around the Gaza Strip, were closed officially yesterday, even before the barrage of rockets was received. So there was obviously some prior understanding that it was going to be a tough day yesterday. As I already spoke yesterday, a lot of the schools were closed in the Gaza area, in the Ashkelon area, in the Tivot, other areas, Sderot, places like that. Children were not at school, and it wasn't a usual day. People were told to stay near to their protective shelters, and there were quite a number of sirens. Obviously, with those 50 missiles being fired towards Israel, there were a number of sirens. I don't have the exact numbers, but a lot of the missiles were intercepted by Iron Dome. There was a statistic published that says that Iron Dome had been more than 90% accurate in the hits that it had carried out, interceptions against those incoming missiles. There were reports of damage, of shrapnel falling on a home as a result of an interception above by Iron Dome. There was also a report of a missile falling in a children's playground, right in the playground. There were actually TV footage showing that missile that had fallen in the children's playground. Fortunately, no children in the playground on that particular occasion, with the warnings that had been issued for people to remain in protective areas. That was the case yesterday. And as I understand it today, there is still no school in those areas where there was no school yesterday. So obviously the security authorities not sure about this ceasefire, which has now come into being. It was officially declared unilaterally by the Palestinian Islamic Jihad yesterday, saying that they had fulfilled their military objectives, they had done what they wanted to do, and they were going to stop, and that the ceasefire officially was going to come into place at 10 o'clock last night. Well, there were sirens, code red sirens that were being sounded even as late as 11 o'clock last night. But since then, I haven't noticed any code red sirens having been announced. And so it seems as if the rocket fire did stop at around 11 o'clock last night. It's fragile because this is not an agreed ceasefire. This is just Palestinian Islamic Jihad saying, we have fulfilled our objectives, we're not going to fire any more rockets now. So we kind of rely on their word more than anything else. But it's interesting that this particular conflict that has arisen so suddenly and now hopefully has dissipated was particularly against Palestinian Islamic Jihad and not against Gaza and not against Hamas. When we talk about, you know, the operations that the IDF has carried out, they have been very, very targeted against Palestinian Islamic Jihad targets, both in Damascus, where we understand that something like 6 people were killed in the operation, the Israeli Air Force operation that apparently targeted a research and development facility that was being run by a Palestinian Islamic Jihad in that Syrian area, using that facility to produce weapons and to develop weapons and other arms that could be used against Israel. And of course, Palestinian Islamic Jihad targets in Gaza. I mean, we have to recognize that as a force, once upon a time, they were very much a renegade minor force in Gaza. It seems as if the Palestinian Islamic Jihad has become a very much more significant force, both within Gaza and, of course, with a presence in Syria. So as things stand at the moment, roads remain closed in the Gaza Strip area, around the Gaza area. Schools will not return to normal routines today. People will be staying home within protective areas. There are still specific instructions about gatherings of more than 300 people that need to, the gatherings of more than 300 people are actually not allowed at the moment. And those gatherings that do take place, whether it be for functions or for smachot or for other celebrations, have to be done within a closed and protected area. So very, very specific instructions about people's behavior within that area. Hopefully today we'll see the end of that. And we can then start talking about what we really don't want to talk about, which is the elections.
Yeah, absolutely right. All right. But for the first time, I see that Likud is leading in the polls. Why? Has there been a change?
I don't think there's really been a change as such. I mean, there's been a fascinating flip all of a sudden, because up until now, all the polls have shown that Kahol Lavan, the blue and white party led by Benny Gantz, has been leading in the polls. When we say leading, I mean, we say like by 2 or 3 or 1 seat, depending on which poll you look at. And let's just remember that at the end of the last election, which produced no results at all, because, of course, the government wasn't formed, Blue and White had 33 seats as opposed to the Likud's 32 seats. And in the end, it was Likud who was able to muster more seats than Blue and White in terms of trying to put a coalition together. They managed to get a group of 55 seats out of the 61 that are needed. Blue and White couldn't even do that. So, the fact that Blue and White may have had the overall majority of seats doesn't necessarily mean that they will be the ones or could be the ones or would have been the ones to form a government. It all just depends on who your friends are and how many seats you can muster together in a block. And so a lot of the focus is not necessarily about getting votes for Blue and White or for Likud. It's also about trying to avoid people, prevent people voting for some of the other parties, especially those parties who ultimately will not be able to go above the minimum number of votes required in order to even have a say. The minimum number of votes required is 3.5%. It represents about 4 seats in the Knesset. For parties who don't manage to achieve the minimum threshold, their votes are simply thrown away. They're absolutely discarded. They have no bearing at all on the overall election other than to then just rejig the percentages of all the other parties. So if, for example, 3 parties might just be below the threshold of 3.5, that's a total of 10% of votes that will simply be thrown away. And that means that the rest of the parties will then be recalibrated according to their percent of 90% of the vote rather than of 100% of the vote, if any of that makes sense to you. Mm-hmm. So it does influence the way that the seats are distributed, but a vote to a party that's not going to achieve the threshold is effectively a wasted vote. And Prime Minister Netanyahu has been very, very active in trying to encourage those parties who probably would attract voters who could support the Likud. He'd been trying to encourage them not to vote for smaller parties that might not achieve the threshold. And he's done even more than that. He's even said to those parties, don't stand. Don't allow yourself to be put out there so that your votes will actually go to waste. We would rather have those votes come to the Likud or to another party that will be counted in order to try to tip the balance ultimately. And having said all of that, it seems as if our friend Avigdor Lieberman from the Israel Beitenu party is going to continue to be the kingmaker. He held 8 seats after the last election. We will talk a little bit more about that as time progresses towards the Monday election date.
Absolutely, we will. Unfortunately, Avigdor Lieberman didn't exactly use his kingmaker status the way he could have to help Israel to form a government. But certainly, this is a story that we will keep talking about. It is 8 o'clock. That was Anthony Reich with your Israel report. Here's Anati with your news.